someone looking to offer stories to strangers and to send them traveling beyond cyberspace and into the deepest chamber of the human heart. I hope this little chronicle is an analog of larger undertakings. Autobiography is a poorly named genre. After all, when we tell stories about ourselves, we're speaking not of who we are, but of who we have been, somebody we once were, one who no longer exists except in memory. That mental function more attractive to errors, distortions, and fantasies than the myths of the American West or Sasquatch or cavity probes by aliens. Although I hope it is otherwise, this story might be termed an inadvertent autobiography written not by the traveler who took ghost dancing in 1978 over the byroads of America, but by a man only listening to him. That blue roadman hasn't been seen in more than a third of a century, and over the last many weeks, as I sketched in these pages, I've regretted his inevitable departure. I wish I could have heard directly from him about the scent and flavor of those years when he was trying to tell the story of a long journey. As if foreseeing this day and realizing he would know things I don't, he left behind notes and pictures and documents for me to puzzle out in hope of writing accurately. Surely, though, he would shake his head over some of what's about to happen in this narrative that I want to escape the bounds of autobiography. I've tried to make Writing Blue Highways the kind of book I looked for when I began comprehending what Blue Highways would require, when I started to see what the devil I was getting into. Although writers have been writing about writing almost from the beginning, I still haven't found anything containing what I was in search of. Had I anticipated the 4 years of travails following the 3 months of travels, and had I understood the impediments and encumbrances and barriers inescapably coupled with any serious writing, I could have lived less labored in mind and body. Writer Henry Miller said, "The most hazardous voyages are made without moving." Despite the 3 millennia of authors experiencing the bugaboos native to literary creation, I was little aware of their universality, and so, week after week, I blindly reinvented old means to kindle and stoke creative fires. When I mentioned the title of this book to a friend, he said, "You're calling it Riding Blue Highways?" I thought about it a moment until remembering, it was the book that rode me. What's here is not a manual on ways to write, although there are chips of counsel. Rather, it's a compact guide on ways to survive the demands of real writing, and perhaps a dispelling of a few popular illusions. This is the story of how Blue Highways began, repeatedly slipped toward the pit of failed dreams, only to clamber up and creep onward toward a rainy day in December 1982. As you'll see, this biography of a book ultimately is not so much about struggles as it is about where struggles can lead, and in that way, like its progenitor, it too is a road book about traveling a strange and poorly charted land. If I can set down things aright, then for a writer striking out into new territory, perhaps I can lay down a few flagstones, hang a rope bridge or two, and maybe even put up a couple of signs warning of dead ends. Chapter 2. The Journey Contemplated. In the weeks leading to my setting forth on the road, I saw my 10-year marriage collapse and my part-time job teaching English at Stevens College in Columbia, Missouri, disappear because of declining enrollment. Underlying those changes was the memory of 600 letters from colleges and universities saying they had no openings in my area. In a drawer was an unframed, unhung diploma commemorating 5 years lost in earning the legal right to attach to my name 3, now useless, letters, Ph.D. At commencement, a fellow graduate passed a note. "Welcome, Doc. You're now Ph.D. U-C-K-E-D.